At the end of my grandfather's life, his doctor prescribed a powerful hydromorphone against the pain of bone cancer. A lot of Germans were busy knocking holes in the Berlin Wall around that time, and I showed up to say goodbye to my grandfather just as the drug was bringing its soft hammer to bear on his habit of silence. Out flowed a record of his misadventures, his ambiguous luck, his feats and failures of timing and nerve. He had been installed in my mother's guest bedroom for almost 2 weeks. And by the time I arrived in Oakland, he was getting nearly 20 milligrams a day. He started talking almost the moment I sat down on the chair by his bed. It was as if he had been waiting for my company. But I believe now that he simply knew he was running out of time. The recollections emerged in no discernible order, apart from the first, which was also the earliest. "Did I tell you," he said, lolling on his palliative cloud, "about the time I dropped a kitten out of the window?" I did not say then, or at any point until he sank into the cloud for good, that he had told me very little about his life. I had yet to hear about so many things, so I could not point out to him that I sensed a motif of defenestration beginning to emerge in his autobiography. Later, when he did tell me about all those things, I would choose to skip the smart remark. "Did it die?" I asked him. I was eating a cup of his raspberry jello. Nothing else tempted his palate apart from a spoonful or two of the chicken soup my mother cooked for him. "It was a third-story window," my grandfather said. He added as if his native city were known for its sidewalks. "In Philadelphia." "How old were you?" "Three or four." "Wow, why would you do something like that?" He poked out his tongue once, twice. That was something he did every few minutes. It often looked as if he were passing clownish judgment on something you had just told him, but it was really only a side effect of the meds. His tongue was pale and had the nap of suede. I knew from a few precious demonstrations during my childhood that he could touch the tip of it to the tip of his nose. Outside the window of my mother's guest bedroom, the East Bay sky was gray as the nimbus of hair about his suntanned face. "Curiosity," my grandfather decided, and stuck out his tongue. I said that I had heard curiosity could be harmful, in particular, to cats. Well, I love reading Michael Chabon, especially chapter by chapter, where each chapter can be packaged as a short story of its own. And certainly that is so in this book, a format that Chabon excels at writing. He is winner of the Pulitzer Prize for his magnum opus, Cavalier in Clay, the story of two cousins who combine forces to become major forces in the comic book heyday of the 1940s and 50s. His forte is writing about the slightly off-center personality, guys and gals who make a valiant effort to hew to the straight and narrow of their culture's demands, but who are lured by fate, by personality quirks, by inquisitiveness to stray from the beaten path, and in so doing enter into escapades that delight, dismay, and ultimately charm the reader. Daniel Swift from the Financial Times wrote about today's book, Moonglow, quote, "Michael Chabon is an escape artist. His novels are elegant and energetic circus tricks which celebrate again and again the joy of release from the constraints of the everyday world." Two of his best-known efforts often revolve around characters imbued with a Jewish sense of self. Read the aforementioned Cavalier in Clay, where two Jewish cousins' lives intersect in mid-century, and check out the Yiddish Policeman's Union, set in a not-so-fanciful alternative history, where Alaska is the Jewish homeland. And take today's feature title, Moonglow, a book rightly described by another reviewer. Chabon can write about just about anything. How true. As his grandfather lay dying, he shared stories of his life with his grandson, and we are lured into believing that the narrator is the author himself. As is fitting for his novels, the grandfather was a man who lived many different lives. A guy, in our opening pages, tries to kill his boss. and goes on to blow up a bridge, spend time in prison, worked in the space program designing rockets. Dr. Wernher von Braun features in this part of the story. His grandfather was a man who loved and married a woman with mental difficulties, raised a daughter, the narrator's mother, in the midst of it all. The novel goes back and forth, with our narrator discussing these things with his mother's recollections, and his grandmother's forays into mental illness, and out of it. The opening first chapters are alone worth the price of a read, though I admit that I was particularly smitten not by that first chapter, fun as it is, but by the second chapter of the book, when our young narrator tells a tale of one of his grandfather's youthful escapades that took him to a nearby train yard, where he meets a tubercular hermaphrodite who turns his young adolescent head in ways both innocent and bawdy, but bittersweet. It's a tale within the larger tale, and it's classic Michael Chabon. Our memoir continues for another 400 pages, not an unusual length for such an outing. As we learn more and delve deeply into the narrator's grandfather's life in the old country of South Philadelphia, a land that our narrator tells us was a mid-century urban world where his grandfather, his parents, his brother, the narrator's Uncle Ray, tussled and lived. They loved a slice of urban life, which Chabon paced with loving care and just a touch of jocularity. Well, the grandfather's journey spins itself forward with ups and downs and twists and turns, landing in Baltimore, where the narrator's mother grew up navigating the chaotic, if loving, household that unfolds before our eyes, with tales of Brock's candies and a Luna moth, of his grandmother's alternately ordered or disordered home studio, described at one point as a reliable barometer of his grandmother's mood and outlook on the world, to which the rest of the family, grandfather included, of course, had to bend. The story ricochets, once again in chauvinistic style, between the recent past and the present, with a glimpse here and there of the future. Having spent a chapter reminiscing about his mother's and his grandfather's memories of his late grandmother, we open the very next chapter with a startling scene. Quote, "It's really just the eyes," I said. "Mostly." My mother didn't say anything. She was looking down at the horse skull on our kitchen table. She pitched her chin between three fingers as if to keep them from averting her face. I mean, all of it, obviously, but especially the eyes. It's one of those odd but true-to-life, yes, narrative comminglings of the past and present that flow through this novel, or perhaps more aptly put, of the past jutting itself into the present, as the narrator's mother remembers a bizarre Halloween from her youthful past. The tale takes us into the midst of World War II, where the narrator's grandfather discovers his love for rockets, inspired by, of all things, a forlorn and lost V-2 rocket that had not yet been fired at Allied positions. On into NASA, as the rockets launch into their heyday of the 1960s, to the narrator's grandfather's retirement community in Florida, and finally to a hurried funeral for the grandfather, with family and friends coming to terms with lives lived richly, if tumultuously. In the end, in the afterglow of this sumptuous read, one is left asking, did Chabon just present me with a slice of his real life, or with the imaginative recreation of that life? Is this really his grandfather we're reading about in Moonglow, or is it a fictionalized image of grandfathers? Chabon hints at the answer in his foreword when he tells us, quote, "In preparing this memoir, I've stuck to the facts, except when the facts refuse to confirm with memory, narrative purpose, or the truth as I prefer to understand it. Wherever liberties have been taken with names, dates, places, events, and conversations, or with the identities, motivations, and interrelationships of family members and historical personages, the reader is assured that they have been taken with true abandon." It's a fascinating, richly written, marvelously told tale of an America not that long gone, recently remembered by an old man as he's letting go of life. Moonglow, the newest novel by Michael Chabon. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, thank goodness, because you want to read this one, as well as certainly the West Lafayette Public Library.